Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, chair of the club's Health and Medicine Memorial Forum and the chair of this program. Now, Adria Breyer put together this program. She's a member of the Health and Medicine Committee, and she asked that I read an introduction from her before I do the next introduction. In her words, since meeting Nancy years ago, I continue to stand in awe of her. When the word cancer is the diagnosis, the ground seems to crack under one, and fissures are far-reaching into all aspects of and people in one's life. There are no demographic, educational, nor economic boundaries. Where does one turn in this chaotic, frightened state? Where does one find emotional support, community, and good, solid, unbiased information? Where does one feel nurtured and uplifted, and oh so important, hopeful? We are each familiar with the phrase, it takes a village. Indeed, with Nancy's vision, Nancy's list was created. Its credo, no one should go through cancer alone. Through her many years of tireless efforts and omnipresent guidance, she has given life and hope back to the individual who was diagnosed and their community. She and the village that is Nancy's list supports people in living in hope rather than in fear, in being empowered and taking action rather than feeling crushed. And it all starts with Nancy, the spoke of the wheel, the spoke of many wheels. When Nancy walks into a room, the rooms light up, the people in it light up. She is an angel in human clothing. My father told me in World War II in Korea, in the military, there was a phrase for those who soared above the rest, who truly made a difference. Those who were unmatchable in spirit, caring, and accomplishment. The phrase was, heads above. Dear Nancy, you are heads above. As you affect one person, you affect all the generations that follow them. It is with everlasting gratitude that we honor you and today at the Commonwealth Club. Love and best regards from Adria Breyer. And now I'll turn the meeting over to Jacqueline Chan, an integrative physician from Mill Valley, who will introduce our speaker, Nancy Novak.
Politicos have Emily's list. Homeowners have Angie's list. Everyone has Craig's list. But people who live with cancer and their loved ones have Nancy's list. The crisis is evident. There is no need to recite the devastating statistics of cancer epidemic in the San Francisco Bay Area. Everyone seems to be touched, whether it is by one's own diagnosis or that of a loved one, a family member, friend, teacher, celebrity, dog, or cat. There's a conversation in the cancer community about surviving versus thriving. And Nancy Novak has survived a life-threatening diagnosis of stage 4 ovarian cancer, which had metastasized to her liver. She's celebrating life and giving back to the community that she has served by creating Nancy's List. As a nonprofit grassroots organization centered in the Bay Area to serve all those who live with cancer and those who love and care for them. Nancy's List is distinguished and set apart from other cancer organizations because it's a community partnership. The epidemic of cancer demands an innovative response. Nancy understands that we cannot rely on the healthcare system to meet the many challenges that come with a cancer diagnosis. We need inventive support systems, neighbors caring for neighbors, because it takes a village, as Adria said. And Nancy's creating one with magnificent success. The program addresses psychological, emotional, social, and spiritual concerns that our neighbors living with cancer face day by day. The San Francisco Bay Area has demonstrated a generosity of spirit and understanding that we are all partners in facing this challenge together. This in itself is empowering to all those living with cancer who have experienced and the warmth and caring of community. Nancy's in a unique position to serve the cancer community. As a survivor herself of the bleak diagnosis and prognosis, she has profound appreciation and understanding of the trauma that a cancer patient endures. She's a clinical psychologist serving the needs of cancer patients all over the world. She was recently awarded the Hero of Marin Courage Award by the Pacific Sun and Circle Bank for her selfless devotion and as survivor being a symbol of hope for the countless throughout the world. She's an alum of the UC Berkeley and California Graduate School of Psychology, and she earned her doctorate in clinical psychology, specializing in family systems. She's also been a recipient of the Amgen Breakaway from Cancer Tour of California, 2008 and 2009, the Pacific Sun Rising Sons of Marin in 2008, the American Cancer Society Gala Honoree in 2010, and the Pacific Sun and Circle Bank Hero of Marin Courage Award, as I mentioned earlier, in 2001. On a personal note, Nancy and I have socialized together. We've been in the movies together. We've talked under the moonlight. We've cried. We've held hands. We've walked by the river. And I've written a poem about Nancy. Actually, I think more than one, because she just inspires that in you. She's so full of love and life. And as much success as she's had, she needs more support. So I'm also encouraging you to think of ways to support her organization. I'm so honored and always in admiration of you, Nancy. Thank you.
Better down there? I don't like that in my mouth. It's really a wonderful honor to be here at the Commonwealth Club with all of you. And I look around and I see some of the people who have held my soul and my spirit for so many years, some of my oldest and dearest friends. And this is a very, very special moment for me. And I want to thank you, Bill and Adria and the Commonwealth Club, for being so gracious in organizing this event. I'm immensely grateful to have the opportunity to talk about Nancy's List. My sister calls it Nancy Once Again Making Lemonade Out of Lemons. But for me, it's become my identity. It's become my passion. It's become my purpose in being. I was diagnosed with ovarian stage 4 cancer 8 years ago, and it had metastasized into my liver, which is an atypical presentation for ovarian cancer, and most oftentimes lethal. In the cancer conversation, they talk about citrus fruits. Like, my right ovary was the size of a grapefruit, you know. My liver was twice the size it was allowed to be. And how in the world could I be in this little body and not know any of this? But nevertheless, that's how it is. Despite the incredibly frightening information offered on the web, and despite what I interpreted as eulogies from all my friends, I knew I'd always make it. And it was just a feeling that that was going to be my path. I had 21 very aggressive chemotherapy sessions with many complications. But I'm the luckiest person in the whole wide world. I truly enjoy the most defying medical statistics and being the poster child for Stanford Cancer Center. And I am cured of ovarian cancer. I got lost in my pages, so you have to help me out here, Nancy. I created Nancy's List in 2008, really as my love letter and thank you note to the universe for my profound gratitude for my miraculous recovery and my life. And I was always blessed with the magnificent A-team. Two of the people who led that team are here, Arlene and Russ. Russ has been my oldest friend from high school, and Arlene fits right in there. They held my hand and my heart the entire way. I was blessed with an amazing oncologist who unwaveringly believed that I was going to make it. And I was blessed with the open hearts of my friends and family who brought meaning to this challenging journey. The first night at Stanford, when everyone was gathering together in kind of shock and awe, my brilliant oncologist said to me, "This is going to be a very rough road. You have a really bleak prognosis and a bleak diagnosis, but hang on tight." And these words, "I am with you." And during my intense and oftentimes grueling and complicated treatment, and it was long, I listened to many of my fellow travelers who sat alone in the chemo infusion room. And I was haunted by that. There was something about seeing so many people being infused with chemotherapy who really needed a comforting hand to hold. And whenever I had the opportunity, I would talk to them and ask them to tell me their stories. And there were so many stories of hopelessness and helplessness. And they worried about their children and how they were going to tell their children honestly what was happening in their lives. They worried about money and foreclosures and bankruptcy and loss of insurance and inability to pay for their medications. They worried about telling their employer and losing their jobs. And there was just this tremendous sense of isolation and profound sadness and anger and distrust and just intense fear. And some of them said, why me? And particularly the ones who were the most angry were the ones who'd been doing yoga every day and were vegans. You know, they didn't appreciate that this had happened to them anyway. So a few demonstrated an abundance of courage and resilience, but quite often it was not the case. And I always remember and held tight the words of my oncologist who said, I'm with you. And I remember that how that sustained me when I felt disconnected and alone. I mean, somebody who could say, I love you, I don't think it would have meant the same as I am with you. And I found myself saying this to these strangers that were so scared in the chemo room. And the simple four words, which I find so exquisite, still direct my course. So I vowed I was going to do something. I was going to make a difference for cancer patients and their families and the people who love and care for them, and particularly for the children who either have a cancer diagnosis or love someone who has. And I knew that I could bring my skills as a clinical psychologist who had specialized in family systems, could bring in the inspiration and generosity of my oncologist, the open hearts of all my friends, and do something. And bring that together to this open and simple, profound wish and mission that no one would ever go through cancer alone. So I live in Marin County, and it's famous for whole bunches of things, including an inexplicable cancer epidemic. So I set out to talk to anyone who would talk to me in the whole Bay Area about what was missing, what were we doing for cancer patients, but what was missing, so I could determine how I could make a worthwhile contribution. And I decided to develop a model program in Marin, which hopefully would be replicated in any community which was facing a cancer crisis. So I initially set out to make a list, Nancy's list. It was just going to be a list of resources, and it was going to be particularly about financial resources, since that seemed to be so difficult for the people I spoke with and myself. And then I got carried away, which some of you know I can do. And I started looking for all the support groups and all the healing resources for each kind of cancer and for the children and for the teens and for the older people and for the different ethnic groups and the different genders. And I just got involved with medication assistance and advocacy programs. And I wanted to know more about employment rights and legal rights. And I wanted to bring in alternative healing modalities. I was just talking to everybody. And I wanted to know how caregivers took care of their needs and more about hospice and end of life and grieving and mourning. And I added a calendar of healing events to the website. And I made partnerships with all the major cancer centers treating children and teens and adults throughout the Bay Area. So the list was launched on February 20, 2008, and it immediately got a great response from the professional healing community and patients and families. And the media was enormously generous, and they published some fantastic articles about the project. And I felt pretty terrific. We were magically on the map. And now many cancer hospitals across the nation refer their newly diagnosed patients to Nancy's List. So I was really encouraged by all this. And yet, I knew that the website was not adequate, that we needed something more innovative. We needed something more personalized. So I decided that I wanted to motivate the community to really respond to this crisis as a community. And my vision was always a grassroots movement. And as Diane, not just Diane, do you believe I said that? Shekling said, it is a community call to action, and that does distinguish Nancy's List from other things. Community got totally involved. And we knew we couldn't rely on the healthcare system to meet all these challenges, but we could rely on our own humanity. And we could engage and support and serve the brilliant courage and resilience and bravery of our neighbors. So at that very time, a group of women in their 30s appeared in my life. Quite serendipitously, they didn't know one another, and there were about 8 of them. But they were very struck by how many people in their 30s, how many women in their 30s were being struck by cancer. And they wanted to help, and they wanted to do something. And they called themselves, we gathered together at my house for food many times, and they called themselves Nancy's Angels. So they concluded that what better way to change the hearts and minds and spirits of the community than to throw a party. So we started throwing parties. And at our first party, I announced my intention, which was to bring more awareness to the needs of our community and to create a new paradigm of how a community can work most effectively to help the cancer families. And I said, it takes a village to deal with the enormity of the needs, and so I want to build one. And I put out clipboards all over the party room. I think Diane was there. Yes? Put clipboards out asking them for sign-ups, to take people to treatment, to walk the family dogs, to babysit their children, to deliver meals, to run errands, to prune roses. And everyone got it. They just got it. And they all started signing up. And it was amazing. And I realized something important. People want to serve. They simply need to be asked. Neighborhoods organized fundraising events for neighbors who were living with cancer. Businesses and healers donated their services. We organized community forums about the issues of importance, about nutrition, alternative healing modalities, about fitness, about talking to our children about sex after cancer, and more. We formed a book club. We took nature hikes at Audubon Canyon Ranch. We rock stars, old-timers, new-timers, and a group of teens from Marin gave rock concerts to fundraise. Students at Marin Catholic High School gave a bake sale. Students at Branson High School formed a club called Friday Night Meals, where they would not only prepare and deliver the healthy meals to cancer families every Friday night throughout the school year, but they'd hang out with these families, and so became relations that were forged, that were long-lasting. Through the leadership of one of our partners, Love is the Answer, we organized children to team up with seniors at senior centers to make get-well cards for the people who were in the hospitals. Mill Valley Montessori Preschool and I organized a bunch of schools to make magnificent gift baskets for the children who were in the hospital at Valentine's Day at UCSF. And little 4-year-old Sienna went with me to deliver the presents, which was like 8 carloads of gorgeous presents. And she said, Nancy, my heart feels so big and fat. One cancer survivor from Reno donated 75 teddy bears to the children at Stanford at Christmas time. And one teen organized 2 all-county high school tennis tournaments to raise awareness about teens with cancer. And it's particularly gratifying to me to see the teens and children reaching out and learning the value of giving. And they all got it. They really got it, and we will continue. I think this is what's spectacular about Nancy's List, that the community partnerships, the children, the seniors, the teens, they're just limitless opportunities of how we can make a difference. And many, many cancer patients have told me how magical it feels to be given the support and the generosity of strangers. So, a lot of angels running around. So all this time, I receive phone calls and emails from people all over the world. I mean, truly all over the world. And many wanted to talk to a woman who had stage 4 ovarian cancer and lived through it. And many wanted to talk about their children or their partners. And many wanted an advocate to help them guide them through the medical system, which was just an impossible process. And many just wanted to talk about how to live and how to die. But everyone who called wanted hope. And more families came into my practice, and there was a little 12-year-old girl who had been adopted early in her life from Tijuana by California parents. And when she came to me, her father had died of cancer, and her mother was sick with breast cancer. And she just looked at me with big, brown, gorgeous eyes and said, "If my mom dies, am I going to be an orphan again and sent back to Mexico?" And there was a little 12-year-old boy, Johnny, whose mother was in her third bout of breast cancer, and his dad was drinking like a fish. And he said to me he was afraid that they were both going to die. And he said, "Please help me find a way to make my dad stop." Some stories like that kept coming, and I knew what I wanted to do. I launched a program that hopefully would bring joy and fun and pleasurable memories to these families, give them a break from being in the midst of the chaos and upheaval and turmoil that they're living with. And I decided to reach out to the children and the teens, because that way I could get to the whole family and give an adventure to the whole group that would be long-lasting in their hearts. And this program is called Nancy's Club. And the children, their siblings, their friends, their parents come together on our adventures. They seem to forge new relationships. They find community. They find courage and strength. And they laugh a lot. And I think that's the very essence of what Nancy's List and Nancy's Club are all about. Sailing became the vehicle and the metaphor for many of our healing experiences. Through some brilliant partnerships with Diane Andrews, rise up, who introduced me to sailing on her small boat and is a love, 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 and Captain Richard Gillette, who is a masterful captain and a photographer, as you will see. And we sailed many, many times with the children on his boat. And the Spalding Wooden Boat Center in Sausalito, we were able to take many children and families out to really see the healing power of the sea. Most of the children who sail with us have leukemia. And for children, treatment for leukemia is a very long process. I've been told today that they estimate 28 months for girls and 36 months for boys, with many complications and many hospitalizations. I would like to introduce you to these children of courage. They are shining stars in my life. Harry was age 3 when we first met Harry. Harry had been diagnosed with leukemia when he was 6 months old and had spent most of his life in the hospital. And Diana, he was coming to Diane's spoke, but we thought he was way too small. I mean, he's just... that he was way too small to sail on this boat. So he was supposed to play on the beach with his mother, and his brother Jack was going to sail on the boat with his dad. Well, Harry took one look at the boat, heard the plan, and would have none of it. And he threw the loudest temper tantrum known to any of us. He just demanded that he sail. And everyone looked at me like I'm supposed to make a decision here. And I just listened to him, and his tenacity and his determination and his just fierce strength just spoke to my soul. And I said, I looked at Diane and I said, "Okay, let's rig up a life jacket for this little indomitable superboy, because Harry wants to sail." And when Diane put him behind that wheel, Harry looked right into my eyes and said, "Here we go. This is the happiest day of my life." And his mother, Katie, said it was such an incredibly uplifting experience for the whole family after 3 years of anguish and turmoil. I went home that night, I have to tell you, and I sobbed. You know, I thought, this is really big. This is really big to see these little kids like Harry. Gal, this is sort of the middle and towards the end of the sale. This is not what we saw when Gal got on the boat. Gal is a 9-year-old leukemia patient, and she had just come to California from Israel and was diagnosed 6 weeks after she arrived with leukemia. And when she came to Captain Richard's boat, I think Diane and Richard and I looked at each other with grave trepidation. She was frightened. She was fragile. She was frail. She wouldn't make any eye contact. It was just a bit too scary. But magic happens on Richard's boat. And by the middle of that sail, she was singing and smiling. And her mother, Haggett, Gal at that time didn't speak English, as I recall, but her mother, Haggett, said to me that Gal said, "When I'm on this boat with you and my brother, I forget I even have cancer." So Rich is going to show you some pictures of Gal. That's her brother, Sar, and her mom, Haggett. He loves to sail. He's really enjoying himself. She's a happy little girl. And I sailed with her again recently, and I didn't recognize her, as you'll see in that picture. And I said, "And what might your name be?" And she said, I'm Gal. I mean, she has been transformed. She's doing well, and we think she's almost through with her treatment. But there's a vibrancy and a vitality, and she loves being on Richard's boat. Okay. We recently sailed with a group of teens in treatment from Children's Hospital in Oakland. The sister of this young girl, Nazreen, told me that Nazreen's sarcoma had frozen her jaw and that she couldn't chew and she couldn't swallow. And she had a feeding tube and that she couldn't smile anymore. And quite by intuition, I asked her to come and stand behind the boat, the helm of the boat, the wheel. And instantaneously, she let out this brilliant smile. And her family started to cry. And her father said to me, "I never supposed that Nazreen didn't smile because she was so sad." That's her sister. Her other gorgeous sister. This is Ramadan, and they're a Muslim family, and you know they weren't eating, and we all chop away at food like it's, you know, we're feasting. In fact, I want to enter one story I want to particularly say because of the women who were here from the Leukemia Society. We were on the Leukemia Regatta. We don't have any pictures from that today, but at the end of the Leukemia Regatta, we ended up at the Corinthian Yacht Club. And they had a feast unknown to man. You know, it was just huge. And these little kids that were from Children's Hospital in Oakland, one little guy named Jesus, was eating everything he could grab as fast as he could grab it. And he was like on his sixth steak and his fourth hamburger. And we all wanted to go home, but we knew we were not leaving because this little boy was hungry. And his dad, Jesus, too, said, "You know, I know my boy will live. He hasn't been eating, and I thought it was all because of the chemotherapy. And now I see that he's eating, and I know he will live." So Ivy bought Mall. Did I do it? I always say it wrong. Ivy has truly, truly inspired my commitment and my passion for this project. She and her family and many of her adorable little friends come on every sail. She delights with her feisty spirit and her love of the ocean. She's had a really rough time with her leukemia, and she's temporarily lost the use of her legs because of her treatment. But the awesome love and support of her family and the community and all of us who simply adore her have strengthened her courage and spirit and opened everyone's hearts. Ivy said to me one time, I love everyone when I'm sailing. I don't think she loves everyone when she's not sailing, right? Not our Ivy. Her she-bear mom, Suzanne, who you'll meet in a moment, said to me one time, and I have to quote this exactly, when we are with Nancy's Club Kids, life stops. The real things are highlighted. Gratefulness takes a front seat, and human connection is the only thing that absolutely matters. I love Nancy's Club. The club has saved Ivy's spirit and probably her life. Meet my dear friend and inspiration, Suzanne.
Girl Ivy, and we have just been absolutely blessed to find Nancy. We were talking about on the way over, like, what are we going to talk about? What am I going to say? But we talk about an education, educating the whole child, or, you know, the first few years of raising a child, you're trying to, you know, nurture every piece of them. And then you go into this crisis mode, and somebody says your child has cancer, and you just, like, your world drops away. And then it doesn't take very long, though. It seemed like it took a really long time, but it probably took about 30 minutes till everybody was like, but it's the good kind, she's going to be okay. And then it's this, but you're in this clinical setting, and until I came across Nancy through Band of Wives, I think I met you there, and we went on this sail, I realized we're in this capsule and nobody can come in, and most people have holy water entering their homes. I have Purell dispensers. And it becomes this really sterile thing, and it's all concentrated. She has three beautiful siblings, and everything becomes about just keeping this child safe. And the other kids are worrying about if they get sick, if they're going to kill their sister, or she can't leave, and it's just every day the worries that you have are so much different than how am I going to get this grass stain out, or are we going to make it to practice on time, or whatever. We went sailing the first time, and she just lit up. Gracie with us the first sail? I think she was. And she was like, I haven't seen Ivy this happy in a really long time. Like, she just lit up. And Captain Richard, I think if you were younger, she'd wait for you. She absolutely adores him. She absolutely adores Nancy. She would sit in his lap at the helm of that boat all day long. The end of her treatment is gloriously next Friday.
Yay!
And she wants to celebrate on board the captain and with Nancy, and that's her big thing. And I think he promised to sleep over.
Oh,
yeah, because she's counting on it. But what I was getting to with it, like the whole child, I mean, with Nancy's club, she brings in the whole family, and when you have everyone there having a good time together and seeing other kids smile, you see other kids changing through it too. Like they kind of come on and they're like, I don't know. And then by the end of the sail, you see these heads thrown back, and they're laughing, and they're smiling. And it just gives you a break. And it's like better than a vacation going away where you're still having to worry about meds and still having to worry about how does this wheelchair fit. Because the wheelchair gets picked up by that strong man over there and tucked away in a corner where we don't have to look at it. And then he hoists up that great big girl and puts her on the boat, and she just comes alive. And she takes a little bit of a spotlight on herself, but she loves it, and her siblings love it. We love it. We get a break from everything, and everybody's spirit is renewed, and then that gets carried home, and it lives on longer than that. And so it's such an amazing gift. It's an amazing gift that you give us.
Thank you.
And you, Mr. Richard, Captain.
Thank you, Susan.
Okay.
Captain Richard, after that, you better say something. This is one of those partnerships made in heaven, I tell you.
Love you. I have the best job in the whole world. I get to give this to families with Nancy and Diane and Susan. It's just the best job in the world. Not only do we get to bring, one of the points that I like about it is we bring the joy, we bring the happiness, we give you a day off, but it's also the interaction that children have. So I just wanted to tell you a little story. I call this gentleman Ansel, after Ansel Adams. He came on the boat with his camera. I'm a former professional photographer, so he and I hit it off. And, you know, we talked about photography, and he was shooting everything, and we were, you know, really getting along well. And later on the day, if you could go to the next slide, you know, he's having fun. He's on the aft deck, and he's talking to this young lady who's a very, next slide, very young, beautiful woman who's just been diagnosed with cancer. And the two of them get talking, and he has a deformed nose from the cancer. And his self-esteem is such that he believes that he'll never have a girlfriend. He'll never be loved. He'll never be liked. He's deformed. He gets talking to her. She says, "Are you kidding me? You are this incredible young man. Any woman, any girl would be lucky to have you as a boyfriend, would be lucky to have you as a friend. You are an incredible young man." He grew about 2 feet. He stood up tall. He was just, you could tell this was better than any medicine he had gotten. He turns to her, they get talking. She's just been diagnosed with cancer. He's had it for, what, 10 years? He's an old pro at all of the treatments of all of what you have to go through. She's at the beginning scared to death. She has a scar from her first operation. And he comforts her and tells her, "You could make it. You can deal with that. If you need to talk, I'm there." So it's not only the smile. It's that kind of, I don't know what to call, magic that happens on the boat. And, you know, it's just, we could do this for the rest, we will do this forever. And, you know, if you know of any kids who can benefit, let us know. We'd love to take them out. And I'm just thrilled to have, you know, this partnership with you, Nancy. You're my hero. I love you.
Kind of like a love fest, you know, especially when you see the children falling in love with each other and saying the sweetest things to one another. It's just, it's all really very sweet. I come home and my heart is so wide open, I think I can't live in reality. There's much to be said for the healing power of a community and connecting to that larger community. There's much to be said to knowing that your neighbors care about you and are looking out for you. And there's much to be said about holding pleasurable memories of joyful experiences with your family and friends. Engaged communities are the cornerstone of our society and what make America great. I am very proud to be part of the San Francisco Bay Area community as we stand together to face the crisis of cancer that is in front of us. It does take a village to handle this crisis, and I think we're building a magnificent one. I'm committed to serving those people whose lives have been so deeply impacted by cancer in any which way I can, and to honor the endorsement of my community for this project with immense gratitude. Thank you. So, at this time, Bill, is this right? Did you write? If you have any questions for any of us or any comments for any of us, we'd love it.
Hi, I'm Tim Blair. I'm sorry. I got late here, but in traffic. But I'm really glad, my friend Stephen, to come here and hear a bit of your story. And Richard, you're sharing about that magic interaction, including between the kids themselves. I have a peripheral project that may have some link up here with you guys, with adults with cancer, called Transformational Sailing. But we have a common parallel experience and passion in what I've done and other people I know who share this love of sailing. There's something magic about being out in the natural world that's healing and renewing. And I really hope that if there's anybody in the community of medical practitioners and physicians and hospital administrators, really take this seriously, this kind of project, and these programs we're all trying to do as a community here, seeing it's truly not just an adjunct to healing, but a core component of healing and recovery. It's more than just a recreational good time and socializing. It's so much more. And I'll state it and leave it at that, but look forward to everybody here telling everybody they know about this kind of thing and joining in.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for being here and for the others of you who spoke. It was very moving and touching. What struck me the most is just that you give children and their families an opportunity for a joyful experience, which I think is so missing in the cancer journey in general. But I also recognize that there must be moments of great sadness and loss. And I'm wondering how you and the others who are involved in this project cope with that and keep going and providing these great opportunities.
Okay. The truth is there's tons of loss. There's tons of loss. I work with a lot of women with ovarian cancer. I've experienced a tremendous amount of personal loss when they lose their lives. You know, haven't lost any children. That would be really a tough one. But cancer is wicked. And I think it takes, that's what I'm saying, it takes so much to deal with the emotional component. I'll make my little two-minute pitch here. One of the things that I think is missing in the cancer conversation is the need for psychological and emotional support from the professional community. And when I was diagnosed, my oncologist said to me, get thee to a therapist and find one who's had cancer. And that was impossible. I called Rachel Riemann. I called everybody I knew to say, I want a therapist who's already experienced this, and I couldn't find anybody. And I'm willing to teach therapists how to be with cancer patients because it's way different than being with anything else that we deal with. And I want families to experience the, I don't even call it therapy, but just to be able to tell the stories honestly and to break through some of the stigmas and to break through our barriers that we have about talking about cancer, I think would make for great healing. I think it's really missing. What I also know is that even down at Stanford, they have therapy for the physicians who are burning out because there is so much, it's difficult to work with life and death like this. And many of the people that I do see in a professional way want to talk about living and dying. They want to learn, am I going to work to find out how to live, or am I going to work to find out how to die? So there's some very big issues. This is not a fluffy project that we're doing. I don't think it's a fluffy project. I think it's what Tim says is true. It's very integral to keeping up the wholeness, is to have some joy and fun and get out of the medically driven community. And just like Gal said, I forget I even have cancer when I'm on the boat. That's powerful. But personally, sometimes I have a hard time. I don't like.
I wanted to add to what Nancy was saying about the therapy, because through this process, I've had to have all four of my kids in therapy. And, you know, they don't want to do family therapy. They each want their own person. And they all have great people, and I'm grateful to all of them. But finding someone who had specialized in dealing with siblings of cancer patients or young cancer patients. It was an absolute impossibility, absolutely impossible. And mm-hmm. I remember when they give you this huge binder at the hospital when you get all this, your little stuff when they let you go. And it's got every piece of information you would ever need in it, except for that one piece that you really, truly need. Mm-hmm. And I think it's such a shortage. I don't know where we find these people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sad.
It reminds me a little bit of the height of the AIDS epidemics here in San Francisco. I was a very active emotional support volunteer at those times. And there weren't any answers back in the 80s and the 90s for most people. And we didn't know what we were doing. But at Shanti at that time, mm-hmm. it just brought people together who cared. And the only thing they really could do was to teach us how to listen, which is the most important part of emotional support.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to go a long way for most people. Mm-hmm. And then the clients themselves often got together as well as the volunteers, and that seemed to give them the support that they needed, especially mm-hmm. since there didn't seem to be any other resources out there at that moment.
You know, we do a little trip that didn't get mentioned in all this. Spalding Boat, Wooden Boat Works has a little boat for 6 people. And we try to do this at least once a month, and it's usually women, although a couple times guys have come. And these women go out sailing. They don't know each other. They go out sailing for a couple of hours, and all I get back is all this feedback. Oh, wait, I just made the best friend. And, you know, there's just all of a sudden you've got a friend to talk to. And I totally agree with you. You want to tell your story, and you want someone to generously listen to you. You know, when I put my name on this project, that was a very thought-out decision. And I didn't want something that sounded, don't get mad at me, but I didn't want something that said American Cancer Society. I wanted a person. I wanted them to know there was a person who was going to respond to their needs, who would call them as soon as she could, who would actually listen and care about what happened. And it's been sort of an evolutionary process to really like claim all that. But that's the only thing that would have worked for me, to have that kind of relationship with the people I deal with. And I'm proud of that part of it.
I just want to mention another special event and really have to thank Richard for being a true hero and open to interesting things that we brought on. So I live in Sausalito, and I was taking a walk one morning along the rocks, and there was this lady I saw, and her dog was like running on the rocks, and it was like low tide, so the foliage, what is that, seaweed was all wet, and, you know, that's slippery. Well, this dog was just flying across, and so I have that back, and it had actually fallen on some recently, and so I started talking to her, and she said, yeah, he's like, you know, 12 years old or something like that, and this is his favorite thing to do, and he's just jumping on the rocks and not sliding, just jumping, and we're going back and forth and start talking, and she's a teacher, and so for some unknown reason, she said, well, you know, he also has cancer, and I go, oh, really? And this is like on a Thursday, and we had a sale coming up on Saturday. And so I said to her, wow. And I said, you know, has he ever been on a boat before? And she said, yeah, I think she said yes anyway. And so I said, well, I kept thinking, what's poor Richard going to say?
But then did we even ask him?
No.
I don't think so.
No, I didn't. So then I said,
yeah. Snuck it in there.
Well, guess what, Richard? And so I said, well, you know, I'm part of a group that takes kids out sailing and their families who have cancer, and, you know, would you ever want to come along for the ride with your dog? And so she did, and this is the little dog here.
Chelsea, and when we had these children along, there's kind of an area that we're all sitting at, and there was another girl who was there, and she had her little hat on, and the girls were all together, and the dog was there, and he didn't move. And so they were all talking and petting. The dog was just such, you know, everybody loves this little dog. And one of the girls said to the mom, the owner of the dog, you know, well, how come she got to come along? And so she said, well, she has cancer. And you could just see this connection between the kids and I'm not alone in this. And it's like, oh my gosh, it affects other people and little dogs. And it was just like a bonding again, another unique little thing like, you know, it was just a special, special moment of caring and sharing, and it was just another special time.
And Chelsea got her own life vest, and she kept coming.
Yes, that's right. That's right. She did.
I just wanted to share, in 1977, my mother passed from cancer, and where I first got informed and involved in this thinking about these things, and I didn't fully become a professional therapist, though I was in training for that back then in college and through the late 70s. But I remember talking to this Dr. Cooper, who was the oncologist at Kaiser there in Terra Linda, my mother's physician, and I want to share this because I got pointedly early on then informed on the issue of the emotional ability of professional healthcare providers to handle the emotions of being in that line of work. And I said, and also there was a couple other technicians that were, they were like arms, they couldn't open up emotionally and show warmth or any sense of connection with myself or the other family members, or much less my mother as a cancer patient. And I said, if you could only start to understand the difference between sympathy and empathy, and sympathy is where we emotionally engage such that it's very easy to be overwhelmed emotionally, you take the energy of that person suffering in. And the more kind of Buddhist perspective, the thing of empathy, where you're there and you understand the larger picture, or you're forced to be bigger than, so the suffering somehow is changed. And in the sailing experience, I just want to say, sharing for Richard and all of you that volunteer, and from my experience and others that have done this kind of thing as well, when you're sharing this adventure of sailing out in nature and that dynamic thing, you're in empathy with your guest sailors who are on the boat with you, whatever stripe, whether or not they have cancer or not. There's a connection and energetic shared joy at the core that you just can't, it's different than, you know, therapy in an office is all good and great, but there's something in the shared experience of your excitement, your joy with folks going through this, their vulnerability, and that kind of connection is really the core, I think, that transforms people, you know, and getting a little choked up because I've talked to my share of oncologists who some get it and some don't. And it's not to judge them who don't get it, but to help them understand. So if any of you are professionals or, you know, again, how can we, Nancy and Richard, start? I would like us to offer some sailing experience for healthcare providers and really get to the core of these issues to help them become better healers in what they do, and get the joy of what we're talking about, besides for the people, the patients, the clients going through it.
Mm-hmm. We have taken some of the social workers from Children's Hospital in Oakland and Kaiser in Oakland, and they're fans. You know, they know that their kids need to be doing this. And these are teens in treatment, so they've got some big issues, but I think we need to do some more with them with the new boat.
If I may share, I happen to be in a family of physicians, and I have lost family members to cancer, including very young brothers-in-law and in-laws. And as a spouse to a physician myself, I see the impact of my husband coming back from work. I see the impact of my brother-in-law, who was involved in the cancer area, the impact on them that they probably cannot show you, the patients, when they're in the office with you, because they are professionals. They are trained to save lives, and they are trained to block their emotions so that they could give you the best that they could give you as a trained professional. However, when they come home, that's when the family members see the human side of that person that you may not see. And I know it is very hard, because I hear them say, gosh, especially in these cases, I'm very happy that these people, these children, adults, they found the cancer in the early stage, so they have opportunities. They have you know, resources to go to. But we have, or my relatives, have seen patients who come in the end stage. And so it is extremely draining on the medical professions to feel that they've been trained to save lives, and yet when you see a patient who comes at the end stage, because they're not aware that they're at the end stage, they feel so helpless themselves as a profession, and it will be unprofessional for them to show that to the patients. And hence, a lot of times, I do come to understand now, having been in the family and living and hearing and seeing all that, that they need to approach, you know, cancer patients with that. It's a self-defense mechanism themselves, because if they allow themselves to get involved emotionally, they may not give you the best treatment.
But you know what? I don't want to interrupt you on that, but they don't have to work in isolation. You know, that's the whole point, is that if they don't want to do it, refer out, as we say, to somebody who can take care of the stuff that they're not comfortable doing.
Oh, I'm not talking about them not being comfortable. I'm trying to help bring my perspective from one side that I see.
Uh-huh.
You know, it is just as hard as it is on the patients to see that there is this, you know,
of course,
the medical profession having that hands-off, because they're trained to approach patients that way. But I think also, the doctors are also quickly realizing that they can't operate that way, because it is not only a disservice to maybe the patients, but also emotionally to themselves and to the family members when they come back. So I'm just trying to bring that perspective in case, you know, that is not something that people have thought about. I'm not making excuses mm-hmm. for whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's extremely hard on my husband and my brother-in-law when they talk about their patients, their cancer patients that they can't help, and the burden of living with that and knowing there is this hopelessness and not having the answer, you know, not being able to help the patients out is just as hard on them as it is on the patients themselves. So, but I certainly appreciate what you're doing, and I admire what you're doing, and I'm here because I want to see how, you know, how people like me can get involved and help, because cancer strikes everybody of all ages and of all ethnicity and all that. So, but thank you.
Thank you.
I'm curious, Nancy. If Nancy's list and Nancy's club is so much. But you drive that bus. And I'm curious about thinking you've done about how to make it so that Nancy's List can be bigger or have more people involved. At a leadership level, and what if you've done some thinking about that, and if so, what that is?
I'm always thinking about that. You know, one of the directions that I've often thought about is that this could be replicated in other communities, and there's been some interest
shown to me about doing that in other cities. And it's, you know, it's a financial issue. If this organization, as all of you have heard me speak of, doesn't fit into the funding criteria for a lot of grants from different corporations, et cetera, because most of them want to fund breast cancer, or they want to fund research, or they want to fund something else. They don't actually talk about quality of life funding. Although I did get two checks this week that were pretty amazing. St. Francis Yacht Club sent me $1,000 and Give Something Back gave me $1,500 yesterday. So there are surprises. You know, those weren't even applied for. But generally, it's been very, very hard to get funding for this project. And I know that we aren't any of those things. We're not working with the underserved or the uninsured. We're working with anybody and everybody who has cancer, you know. And so it's a difficult one. I would truly welcome assistance on that level and leadership assistance on that, because I know that I have the potential to do more. But I'm sort of hooked into this keeping a website busy, keeping talking to all these people, which I would still want to do. But there's so much more we can do, so much more. And it's sad to say, but it's really all about money. Okay.
Our thanks to Nancy Novak for her comments here today. We also thank our audiences here as well as those listening to this recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 109th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.